representing Del Monte
Your conference is being recorded.
Arcito Alejandro, Chief Operating Officer of DMPL. Parag Sachdeva, Chief Financial Officer of DMPL. Dave Myers, COO and Interim CEO of Del Monte Foods. Paul Miller, CFO of Del Monte Foods. And this is Iggy Sison, Chief Corporate Officer of DMPL. Parag Sachdeva, our CFO, will now present our third quarter results.
Thank you, Iggy. I would like to draw your attention to slide five, which provides the highlights of third quarter and also refers to the outlook. With regard to the third quarter, our revenue was slightly higher at $604 million for the quarter. Net income was significantly up at $11.6 million. Our deleveraging is planned with preference shares offered. With regard to the outlook, the group is expected to generate a higher profit in FY17 than prior year on a recurring basis. There is major emphasis on strengthening the core business, innovation, and digital strategy. And we continue to improve financial performance through procurement synergies and G&A cost optimization. Moving to slide six, on the group results summary, sales of $604 million is higher than last year by 0.3%. U.S. sales down by 3%, mainly from volume decline. Philippines has grown at 3% in local currency, but lower in U.S. dollar terms by 1.5% due to devaluation of peso. S&W in Asia has grown by 39%. OEM exports has grown by 23% with improved supply of pineapple products. JV in India has grown at 7% in local currency and 4% in US dollar terms. EBITDA of $49 million is up 5% from 46.5. Operating profit of US$33.9 million, up 25% from 27.2. Net profit of $11.6 million, up significantly from US$2.1 million. All of the above profitability numbers are without one-off costs and are versus last year. Slide 7 provides overview of non-recurring expenses, and mainly on account of two main restructuring initiatives that were initiated from the prior period. US$4.5 million for severance and other related costs is the incremental cost of organization optimization program that the company announced earlier in the year. An incremental charge of $0.9 million was incurred for the closure of North Carolina plant that was undertaken in Q4 of last year. Would like to also remind that last year impact of one-off items was a net pre-tax impact of $12.4 million, mainly on account of ERP implementation and severance. Slide 8. Provide a more detailed overview of our reported results. Third quarter sales at US$604 million is 0.3% higher than last year. This was mainly due to strong sales in Philippines, S&W Asia, and OEM exports, offsetting lower sales in the U.S., which will be explained more in the turnover analysis. Gross profit higher than last year, mainly from productivity gains in Asian operations, offsetting unfavorable pricing in non-retail channel in the U.S. Plus, this quarter also includes $0.9 million one-off incremental cost for the U.S. plant closure, as outlined in the non-recurring expense analysis. EBITDA of $43.5 million and operating profit at $28.4 million, higher versus last year by 5 and 25% respectively on a recurring basis. Operating profits are higher mainly due to strong operating results across Asia, in addition to good control of operating costs in the U.S. On a reported basis, EBITDA is higher by 27.6%, whereas operating profit is up 92.1%. Financing cost, as covered in the prior calls, is higher than last year, mainly due to conversion of floating to fixed rate effective February 2016 on the first lien term loan that we have in the U.S. Loss from FieldFresh, our JV in India, in which we own 47%, is higher than last year, mainly due to continued marketing investments and sales also being impacted by demonetization that came into effect in November 2016. And just to remind you, Q3 is our biggest quarter in India as well. Net income for the quarter on a recurring basis is up fivefold at $11.6 million. Net debt at $1.96 billion, higher marginally by 1.1% due to higher inventory levels that we are carrying in the U.S. Slide 9, third quarter turnover analysis. America's constitutes around 75% of our total group sales, declined at 2.3%. The key drivers for the sales performance were continued weakness in the canned fruit industry, lower sales of regional brands in the packaged vegetable category across retail and food service due to supply-related issues, lower sales of private label and store brands. Also, inventory deload being higher as retailers continue to focus on improving cash. Despite decline in shipments in Q3, we continue to maintain or see share growth with major retail customers. Asia Pac at $141 million grew at 4.6%. Philippines market, which constitutes almost 68% of our total Asia-Pac sales, grew at 3% in peso terms, driven primarily by beverages and fruits. Food service channel continued to perform strongly and grew at 7% in peso terms. Sales of S&W brand grew significantly both from our recent co-branding initiatives in China for fresh, as well as growth of processed food business in North Asia and Southeast Asia. Europe sales increased significantly to $13.4 million from a small base of $7.4 million due to improvement in pineapple supply. Slide 10 provides a summary of year-to-date month 9 group results. Sales of $1.7 billion, lower by 2%. U.S. sales down by 6%, out of which volume mix accounts for approximately 4%, with 2% being sales price. Philippines has grown at 9% in local currency and 5% in U.S. dollar terms. S&W in Asia has grown significantly by 43%. JV in India has grown at 12% in local currency and 8% in U.S. dollar terms. EBITDA of $150.5 million, up 8% from $139.1 million. Operating profit of $101.2, up 18% from $85.6. Net profit, as mentioned earlier, up significantly from $9 million in the prior period. All of the above profitability numbers are without one-off costs and are versus last year. Drawing your attention on slide 11 provides a very quick snapshot on non-recurring expenses. Pretty much two items as were outlined in Q3. $8.2 million for severance and other related costs. That did provide us an annual savings of close to $10 million. An incremental US dollar $3.6 million related to closure of one of the North American plants that was undertaken in Q4 last year. Again, when it comes to prior year, the last year impact of one-off items was a net pre-tax gain of US dollar $17.9 million on account of retirement plan amendment, which in itself amounted to $39.4 million and was entirely recognized in Q2. On slide 12, we'll do a bit more deep dive into our year-to-date month 9 results on a reported basis. Year-to-date month 9 sales at $1.7 billion, 2.4% lower than last year, mainly due to lower sales in the U.S., again being partly offset by strong sales in Philippines and S&W Asia. Will be explained more in the turnover analysis. Gross profit at US dollar $366 million, lower than last year, mainly due to lower sales and lower pricing, largely in non-retail channel in the U.S. It also includes US dollar $3.6 million one-off incremental cost for a U.S. plant closure, as outlined previously. Impact of lower volume, unfavorable pricing, and higher trade promotional spend was more than the benefit from lower commodity costs and cost optimization programs, both in U.S. and Philippines. EBITDA of U.S. dollar $138.6 million and operating profit at $89.4 million, higher versus last year by 8 and 18% respectively on a recurring basis. Operating profits are mainly high due to strong operating results across Asia. Financing cost is higher than last year by $9.6 million due to conversion of floating to fixed rate effective February 2016 on the first lien term loan. Loss from Field Fresh, same as last year, mainly from strong performance of processed food, which is offset by higher investments in marketing to drive top-line growth and also negative impact from demonetization that we saw in Q3. Net income for year-to-date month 9 on a recurring basis was $26.7 million, and that has almost tripled versus last year. Net debt higher by 1.1% due to higher inventory levels, gearing ratio at 548%, marginally lower than last year, mainly due to an improvement seen in shareholders' equity in the last 12 months. Slide 13, year-to-date month 9, 2017 turnover analysis. America constitutes around 76%, declined at 6.1%. The same reasons that I explained in Q3 results would be largely applicable to year-to-date performance as well. So I won't belabor the point again. Would just emphasize that despite decline in shipments, we continue to maintain or see share growth with major retail customers. Asia-Pac region at $392 million grew at 11.9%. Philippines market that constitutes 68% grew at 9% in peso terms, driven by its packaged pineapple, culinary products, and beverages, driven by expanded penetration and increased consumption across categories and retail. Food service continued to outperform, growing by 15% in peso terms. Sales of S&W brand grew significantly, and following the same trend that I outlined in Q3. Europe sales increased marginally to $21.2 million due to improvement in pineapple supply. With that, I would turn it over to Dave Myers to give you an overview of the U.S. operation.
Thanks, Parag. Slide 14. In the U.S. marketplace, Del Monte has a strong number one and number two leadership position in the categories in which it competes. However, like other U.S. center store categories, many of our categories are experiencing contraction as consumers trend towards the store perimeter and products that are perceived to be less processed. We do see clear opportunities to win through innovation and by differentiating our brands and our products. Much of our product and marketing communication over the last year has reinforced how Del Monte's high-quality products are made with simple ingredients that align with consumer trends. In Q3, we realized some of these opportunities and grew share on two of our businesses, Del Monte Vegetable and College Inn Broad. Slide 15. Our Q3 results are disappointing, but do demonstrate our transitional journey to away from some of our more speculative, bid-based business, private label, and commodity food service. Our lower gross margin, primarily due to lower pricing on USDA fruit and higher fixed cost absorption cost. Slide 16. Our commercial strategy builds upon our brand heritage and is consumer-centric, aligning our business with evolving consumer needs and eating trends. The strategy will focus on three areas. Marketing will strengthen our leadership position in the marketplace and drive consumer preference. Our marketing reinforces the differentiated quality and consumer-preferred taste of our brands. It elevates our products, highlighting their quality, culinary versatility, and convenience, and keeps our brands relevant with younger consumer demographics. Our innovation, as we go forward, we plan to address the changes we are seeing in the U.S. consumer landscape as consumers look for more convenient, healthy, and flavorful meal and snack solutions. We are going to extend into new usage occasions, attracting new consumer demographics. Our recent launch of Fruit Refreshers, the first fruit cup snack made just for adults, is just one example. Incredibly refreshing, these products feature luscious chunks in exotic fruit and coconut-infused waters. As consumer shopping behaviors evolve, so will our distribution strategy, extending our portfolio's reach into new parts of the store, into new channels, and into new geographies. We see exciting opportunities in the store's perimeter and in convenience as we go forward. We will establish a leadership position in the growing e-commerce space, and we will become a fruit and vegetable solutions leader in food service. We're very excited about this plan, and we're putting the right people and resources in place to accelerate it. Let me walk you through a couple ways that this plan will come to life in Q4 and in F18. Fruit Refreshers. This is page 17. Earlier I mentioned Refreshers, one of the innovative products we launched this year, expanding our fruit cup line into an adult demographic with exciting fruit flavor combinations and less than 100 calories. These products are performing well in market and received a number of awards, including the 2017 Product of the Year Award in the healthy snacking category. This award is the world's largest consumer-voted award for product innovation. Receiving this award highlights the work we are doing to keep our brands relevant with the evolving U.S. consumer landscape. Page 18, within the broth category, the cooking stock segments is one of the fastest-growing segments. These products help consumers add flavor to their recipes. In Q3, we launched two exciting College Inn stock items and introduced two new College Inn stock items. These products are supported by a strong marketing plan, features an improved formula, larger size, and new packaging. These products are performing very well in market and have grown meaningful share in this segment. Page 19, college marketing plan. For the first time in over 5 years, we have supported College Inn with marketing in our core Northeast market. The integrated Pour Love In campaign hits on all consumer touch points from traditional TV and print to emerging digital, social, and online video. Page 20, Tasty Vegetables. As I mentioned earlier, one of the goals of our marketing efforts is our brands relevant with millennials and younger consumer demographics. We are doing this by reaching out to them in engaging ways online and with social media to show them how to use our products in new and innovative ways. Partnering with Tasty, we've developed videos showing millennials how to transform a can of Del Monte corn into a bacon jalapeno corn dip for a football game, or how to transform a can of Del Monte green beans into a green bean pesto and steak crostini for entertaining. These videos have been watched by over 13 million. Over 13 million times, engaging this important millennial demographic with our brands. Back to you, Prague. Orsito.
Thank you. Thank you, Dave. Well, outside of the Americas, the Philippines continues to be a major volume and profit contributor to the group. As you can see on slide 21, our dominant leadership shares continue in the Philippines. And to drive further growth, we will continue to build on new categories, channels, and markets to ensure future competitiveness and growth. Going now to slide 22 and 23, these are just examples of what we have done in the key beverage category, which accounts for 40% of our total volume in the Philippines. As you can see, we have expanded the distribution or the availability of our juice products to consumers in restaurants, in quick service outlets, even in the airline business. And recently, we launched two great flavors of Fit and Right, grapefruit and blueberry grape, and initial results are very encouraging. Slide 24, going now to Asia and the Middle East, where, as you know, S&W is our major brand. The brand continues to grow behind our leadership position in the fresh pineapple segment under the brand Sweet 16. And recently, we have also embarked on our e-commerce and digital marketing in North Asia. E-commerce, particularly with this platform, China. And we will have growth and realize S&W's fullest potential in fresh pineapple and products through new channels and avenues of distribution. Okay. Slide 25 talks more about pineapple, S&W in the Philippines, in Asia and the Middle East, where we have achieved double-digit growth in the third quarter. And we will continue to press the growth with expanded distribution in China, where we have partnered with Good Farmer, one of the leading branded fresh produce marketers and distributors in China. Slide 26, just more of the activities that we've done on S&W over the Christmas season. As you can see, there is no down in trying to build the S&W equity in Asia Pacific and the Middle East. Going now to Feel Fresh India, DMPL's share in Feel Fresh joint venture was a bit higher in the third quarter. Sales continued to grow despite the impact of demonetization and higher commodity costs in the first half of the year. But just the same, as you can see from the pictures, we continue to put our Del Monte India products across the trade. Slide 28 is another just clear examples of how we're leveraging our pineapple products in the India landscape. And we've also promoted the content during the festive season on leading social platforms, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram. And finally, slide 29, more pictures of how we are leveraging the brand in the continent. Iggy?
Thank you, Sito. On page 30, we outline our efforts on the sustainability front in the third quarter in support of our group vision, nourishing families, enriching lives every day, how we sustain our people, our communities, and the environment where we operate. On slide 31, we extended the $350 million U.S. loan we have with BDO Bank in the Philippines for 2 years, effective 10 February 2017, on the same terms and conditions as the earlier loan, which matured last February. We are now in the process of just awaiting the eligible brokers upgrading of their systems. Most of them have already done so. And we will release the detailed timetable of our preference share offering in due course. And this will result in a further improvement in our leverage ratio. So on the last page, we summarized the third quarter results, which Parag went through earlier, with revenue slightly higher at $604 million, and net income without one-off items five times higher than the same period last year at $11.6 million, driven by the robust performance of Del Monte in the Philippines and S&W in Asia and Middle East, as discussed by Sito earlier. And we will be issuing the timeline for the preference share offering. So our outlook for the year is that we expect to generate a higher profit in financial year 2017, which ends this April, compared with last year on a recurring basis without one-off items. And this will be supported by our strengthening the core business in the U.S., as discussed by Dave earlier, as well as in Asia and the Middle East, with continued offerings of healthier options and new products in the pipeline, supported by our innovation, which includes our process and packaging technology innovation, and on the back end, our agriculture and manufacturing technology improvements. And digital strategy will also be a key enabler in our strategic plan. And on the cost management front, we will continue to improve financial performance through procurement synergies and G&A cost optimization. So with that, we'd like to open the floor to questions. Jenny?
Yes. Anyone has questions?
Hello? Hey,
go ahead, please.
Yes, hi.
Patrick,
can you talk a little bit? Sorry. Hello?
Go ahead, please.
Yes, can you talk a little bit more about the U.S. business? You can see the performance has been worse than the last year's, both on the sales and the margins. So what's the outlook on in terms of moving away from this this bid-based business and more into the branded business? How long will that transition take, and what's the progress in that so far?
It will take 2 years. The first year will make a significant impact in getting away from the price dominated bid bases. However, because of our PAC, it'll take 18 months to 24 months to get the strategy completed, where we've got a couple strategic players in private label, maybe three or four that we'll do business with, and that'll be on a contractual basis, volume and price, and we will minimize our USDA business, which is all price generated, And all of our marketing, advertising, sales promotion in 18 and the future will be focused on building our branded business, stabilizing the category erosion, and actually in some cases turning it around and helping to grow those categories. And that's what we're focused on in 18 and 19. We'll continue to experience headway in the fourth quarter simply because we're still in the speculative bid basis in both the private label and food service.
Okay, in terms of the capital employed in these segments, has that reduced at all, or will that only happen over the next 18 to 24 months?
If you're are you referring to our factory production in that question?
No, for the bid-based business, I also understand it takes a lot of working capital. So is that is there any kind of improvement in that use of capital, or is that still pretty intensive use of working capital there?
It's been intensive this year. It will start to wane in 18 and completely be out of the system during our F19. We are also looking at our manufacturing footprint. Obviously, being in that bid business, we had to have manufacturing capability that supported that. And we've got a third party in right now analyzing what our footprint should look like once we eliminate this price-oriented bid speculative volume. So we also should see a reduction in our overall infrastructure probably within the next 12 to 18 months as we get through the study and get through the fact.
Okay. And any kind of guidance on what the potential kind of size of, reduction in working capital and, manufacturing assets that this will result in?
Actually, the third party, we should be able to do that at the end of the fourth quarter, but the third party that is analyzing that will not finish their analysis probably for another four to 5 weeks. So by the time we have this meeting at the end of the fourth quarter, we should be able to comment on that.
Okay,
obviously, this
will
be subject to discussions with the board.
Yeah.
So what Dave mentioned is quite preliminary.
Yeah. So that will be addressed in the end of June.
Yeah.
End of June.
Okay, thank you. Hey, another question on the pref share issuance. What's the latest timeline for that?
We're actually just waiting for the Philippine Stock Exchange notice of listing. Anytime soon. I'd like to give a more definite timetable, but we cannot really control the timing of the stock exchange.
But expecting in March, April.
Yeah, that's the expectation.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, I have a question. Hello?
Yeah, please go ahead.
Oh. Yes, hi. My name is Stephanie. I'm from Business Times.
From where?
The Business Times.
Oh, hi, Stephanie.
Hi. Yeah, my question is, just now it was mentioned that the College Inn products were doing well, right?
Yes.
Can I know how much of it contributed to the Q3 bottom line?
We don't specifically give numbers on our individual businesses. I will tell you that it is a very nice business for us and has grown very nicely over the last year or so, and we expect that to continue.
Okay, and building on that, now that Donald Trump's pro-growth inflationary environment and the U.S. Fed possibly raising the interest rates again soon, will Del Monte see this as more difficult to sustain the business in the U.S.?
I think I understood your question. Our Term 1 and Term 2 loans aren't due until 2021, and the revolver is LIBOR-based, but that's in place for another 15, 18 months?
18 months, yeah.
Plus it's hedged.
And it is hedged.
Plus our term loan is hedged.
So we are covered
with fixed rates, yeah.
From any exposure that you were thinking of on the interest cost.
Mm-hmm.
And with the decline in the shipment, the shipment industry is not doing well. Did that affect Del Monte in any way?
You're referring to ocean freight. It's a minimal part of our business.
Yeah. No, it's a minimal part of our U.S.
Didn't have any impact.
Okay. Thank you.
Are there any other questions? Okay, so this concludes our conference call. Thank you for joining us. Thank you.